From Television City in Hollywood.
I'm entertaining the people, and I'm also a fur calling. It's calling for peace in the carnival and love. And also all the youth, the young generation of today. I am begging them, and I'm preaching to them, and I'm selling my record, I'm selling clothes, I'm selling cloth to help the young generation of England today. Black, white, pink, blue, you name it.
Like submarines, got periscopes, like Ollie does. The rope-a-dope, I think your bad breath lady needs a bottle of scope, yo. We got to kick it.
Like Norman Mailer needs an envelope. Like your fat ass mama needs some cantaloupe. Like Walter White needs an isotope.
We need to kick it. Like the NSA likes to interlope. Like Billy Crystal, like the guys on soap. Like the mayor of San Diego who likes to grope, yo. We like to kick it. On
like Nancy Reagan likes a horoscope. Like Galileo likes a telescope. Like Mrs. Willenda likes my thick tight rope.
We like to kick it. Like your pregnant little sister who's got to elope. Like your boy Buster Keaton needs a skinoscope. Like Dr. Marcus Welby needs a stethoscope. We need to kick it.
It's like the Cardinals like to meet the Pope. And like the Democrats like to vote for hope. Like cancers rock the Torah trope.
We like to kick it.
We know how to do it. We're back.
Oh, that is the whole Obama thing.
This is the return from the prelude. We're going to hear about 1983. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what?
Thanks for having us back.
Lenny, Lenny, Duke.
Mark.
Still waiting for John.
John's not here yet.
We'll take a pause.
He's in a meeting.
So we finished 82. We're going to jump in. There is no prelude. There's nothing. 82 finishes.
All right. As everybody's heard, we did the Unity Means Anything.
Yep.
We thought we had Sheldon and Stan's here. They believed in us. Right now,
Lenny, you're pulling the fourth wall.
After 82, we were as pumped as can be for 83. We went home. It wasn't like there's new ownership. What's it going to be like? We were completely excited for the new year. We were going to be second year seniors.
We were going to be leaders. After being, we were going to be in LA.
Right, it was going to be. By the way, we were 2 years. Four of us: me, Adam, Majin, Holtz. We're 2 year inters and 2 year seniors.
So we went, the four of us went L2.
2 year inters and 2 year first year seniors?
L2?
No. L2. 2 years. No.
How do you be a first year senior two times?
2 years
on inter two times? Well, I don't know. He was making
4 years on inter. We were seniors twice.
Everybody was seniors twice, though.
Right, yeah, but you went a first year senior twice. It's logically impossible.
By the way, Kenny Linsky.
What would you call somebody in their second year as a senior who was in five and six?
They're a second year senior by literal definition.
What if it takes a third year to get to LA?
They're a third year senior.
Well, I don't know. That's a good point.
Perfect segue. So we get to camp. We get off the bus. We go to our bunk. We have a new council we've never met.
Never been at the camp before.
Mike Doherty.
New group leader we've never met. No. And now there's nine people.
Andy Belly.
We had nine people in LA, two bunk beds.
I still did. You said that last time. It makes no sense to me. You have an empty camp. And then, so let's get
you guys said five people.
Up LA. Let's this double up. We have a triple bunk bed going on.
I mean, imagine Lippy being in a bunk bed with Birdman. You know, it's not happening. We were in bunk beds.
This
we were.
This is what was so
were.
Interesting.
There were bunk beds earlier.
Because
on
the whole upper camp.
Not in LA.
Alan, in relation to what you were saying, the whole upper camp was still crowded. There was no lower camp. They had already.
Right.
They closed.
Yeah. Nothing new
coming. Garage midi and cadet bunks were empty.
You have to be a pretty stupid parent to send your camp to a kid at the age of 10 or 9 or 8.
Camp
just knowing everyone's leaving. Like it's,
what camp did the kid take?
Yeah, at that point, if you're a first year camper and you're under the age of 10, your parents are really, really making a mistake.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They didn't do a very good research.
You started as a soft that year.
So anyway, we get to camp. Marty, right?
Marty is the head counselor.
Marty, the wood guy.
Not all around.
Yeah.
Okay.
And while Marty is a wonderful man,
long time swagger,
he was not, and a long time swagger, he was really a wood counselor.
Well, his shift was dramatic because he was just this angry wood guy. Like, and I didn't take him as, like, oh, this is a guy who's going to be a head counselor.
He was cool.
But I never in a million years thought he'd be the head counselor.
Thank God for him, in a sense, and put a little normalcy on the situation.
Right? Didn't probably have those skills.
Mm-hmm. But.
He could work a drill, but. organize some swim.
With that said, we get to camp. A group leader comes out to talk to us, who is Jeff Balkan. Right. Balkan's never been at Swago before.
Right.
And he has a son who is in the Inters.
The kid you left alone.
The kid we... Well,
he told this story too.
No, right? We told you that story last time.
Nobody heard the story.
Why would I hear the story on the go-round?
Because you deleted the last podcast.
We didn't delete it.
It never got recorded.
That was the only recorded part.
Well, it's got some
significance. That's the part that got... That we had a technical difficulty.
Take the word again, too.
I believe there is some significance to him having a son there.
Okay.
So... On the second night or the first night, even we had after free play, we had an evening activity, and it was capture the flag, seniors versus the Inters.
Right.
Which notoriously would be the seniors kind of beating up on the Inters.
Pretty violent game, you know? For Swago.
I mean, you know.
Why do you have sunglasses on?
It can make you feel okay.
So Jeff Balkan.
All right, go ahead.
So what? Jeff Balkan comes up to us and says, guys, can you do me a favor? Please don't hurt my son. Be respectful. Be right. You got it. So we figured, all right, here we are again. Open arms, being nice. And we have a great game of capture the flag. Mm-hmm. Next day it ends. And from that day
His son's on screen.
Son's fine. We do the right thing. You know, and the next day, all of a sudden, you know, as Swago, this is day two or day three, all of a sudden the activities come into play, which Arnie Hell, when he was on, spoke about how him and Dave met. I guess Balkan and Sheldon and Stan must have met.
As second year seniors,
we had instructional swim second period. Now you knew second period was maybe at 9:30.
Well, I don't know that that was the second day, but this is. I think what you're saying is it's representative.
he wants.
I just said it's representative.
So you defined it for him.
Well, it was. I believe it was the second day. Now what?
Then I'll defer to you. Go ahead.
Thank you. And then we'd go to play softball, right? Remember the first half of the period would be instruction.
Of softball.
Oh, before calisthenics before
instruction. Right, stretch.
It was at least 10 or 15
minutes,
right?
It was sport-related stretching and calisthenics. Right.
And it was time.
Instruction, and then if there was time, you could have a game. and again, really,
20% of the activities.
And again, don't ask me why, but too. I don't want to... Was Maddie Roseman, Ruben Birnbaum, were they doing...
Maddie was the water.
It was clearly going to be
right
different.
Off the bat, things were not the same.
Well, yeah, we were a little stunned. We're like, this is second year seniors. We've been on senior role for 4 years.
It's nice time to bring it into your picture. Like, all right, now second year seniors, now you get the stretch.
Right. I mean, we still had fun at night. You know, we had our fun where we could have got thrown out at night for the fun that we had, but
we were able to sneak away.
Yes, we were hungry.
So. So Balkan was...
He wore sunglasses, too.
He did. He wore sunglasses. And so Balkan treated us in a way that really sort of felt like, okay, we went to some new camp. And
well, he was very controlling, too.
And even during general swim, you couldn't go sit on the ski slope and just lie around. Like, you had to go down at the water. You couldn't. It was sort of like, wait a minute.
The more we gave in to the activities, the more like restriction they put. Right, you have to sit here. You have to go in the water. You can't do this. You can't do that. And we were like,
and was Sheldon hovering?
He was Stan. I think Stan was more of
the manager
than Sheldon was. I think Stan liked to take control, and Sheldon was just like the
owner.
Although I think Sheldon clearly had a vision of changing our camp into a camp that was different. And this becomes very relevant.
Right? Like the Kutches.
Or even more like maybe a French Woods. Like he introduced a computer class. There was a bunch of things that made you feel like all of a sudden... I know, but it started to feel like he was trying to create his vision of a camp. Which is fine. But so what happens is... Now, and I will defer to Lenny here too. He let me be mayor of the camp. I will say, if you wanted to be, you did. Lenny did.
Yes.
Because, and how we spoke about this on an earlier episode of the Ski Slope, is that sometimes when you feel like you're on the bubble to be a leader,
you don't want to get that.
You want to be a mayor. So I was the mayor, and I had
we felt you had the worst shot of being.
Yes, and I had a long political career at Swago as well. I was the
president of the
group. I was the deputy mayor twice, and then the mayor. That's right. So that's
right. I was the lead in the school show.
I didn't know that. You were deputy mayor 2 years.
Well. I was the secretary when Dial was the mayor.
Okay.
So when Dial was impeached, Sammy moved up to mayor and I moved up to deputy mayor. So what I'm saying, though, and then Lenny was the deputy mayor. So we actually, when it felt like it was really going awry, Lenny and I went up and sat on Sheldon's porch.
He asked us. He approached us and said, when there was a little bit of dissension between us and Jeff Balk and it wasn't going right, Sheldon goes,
dissension.
Dissension.
We didn't deserve it.
We all deserve it.
We're all fine.
Thank you for correcting Mark. Anyway. Yeah, but I did that. Anyway, so he had said to us, why don't you guys come talk to us? Let's sit in my house and we'll talk. So it was Adam and myself.
This is Stan or Sheldon?
Stan and Sheldon.
Both of them.
Yeah, all four of us.
And so we go to Dave's house. Right? What a nice outing.
Yeah, we're talking, right.
But this is like, very interesting.
What do you guys want? And we said, we used to be able to just sit on the ski slope. We're second
seniors. So it's very adult, mature conversation.
We walked out of there and we were like, you know what?
Wait, but hang on.
We high five and we were like, he gets it.
No, wait, hang on. Because we also said, listen, Sheldon, if you want to build the kind of camp you want to build, we even said this. We said, you need to phase out the older campers. You got to let us come for the expectation of what we're here for and start to introduce new things with new campers.
That's a good thought.
So, and he sort of listened to us. It was, and then that night.
So we left and everything was great. That night, Timmy Brody shows up in our bar.
I'm sorry. That night, we go to the mess hall for dinner.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
And Sheldon and Stan invite us to eat at their table.
So they're so impressed.
As a
they're
show
so
of, like, sort of like a solidarity for the camp. So me and Sheldon and Lenny and Stan have dinner, the four of us.
Which, by the way, we joined that dinner feeling. You're feeling a little loopy.
Was
Jake the head waiter?
I don't remember. We were a little loopy, probably.
So we went, and we were like, wow. And I think we clearly made it as a sort of like, I want the camp to see the meeting here.
There's
peace in the land.
I think we had a day of relaxation.
But there wasn't even. But you guys didn't even have issues yet, right? This was still.
No, it was happening.
The schedule, it was boring.
Balkan was not a nice guy.
How far in did you say we were at this point?
Well, within the first week.
We're 2 weeks in?
No, within the first week, I just said.
Well, that's within inside 2 weeks.
2 weeks as well.
So what are the issues you're having with Balkan? It's basically you're just sort of being pissed about the sitting.
Can you imagine going to the social hall to play basketball? And he's like, stretch. Do drills or going on second period when it's 45 degrees.
Are you confronting him? Are you telling him like?
Oh yeah, yeah. We're saying, well, this isn't right. This is. And it's a back and forth kind
of. Right.
Nothing
antagonistic.
Major.
Right.
And then we also.
All right. We just took a little unexpected break, but we are back. So we're talking about it's the first week. Balkan, you guys are having a little friction.
I was saying we had an issue with a close friend in the camp who was really upset with Lenny and I and Monge and Holtz.
Monge more.
I mean, it was the four of us. And we felt like we really needed to go talk to this person, yet we still were supposed to, I think, go to lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And we said to Balkan, listen,
a regular dinner.
Nothing special. And we said to Balkan, 5 minutes
and we said to Balkan, could we just go do this for 5 minutes? It's really important. We shouldn't have done this and we want to apologize. And he was like, no.
You're docked if you go, right?
Right, you're docked if you go. Really? That was a big word that summer. You'll be docked.
Can we please
you'll
go?
Be docked from the canteen. You'll be docked from the
social. For us, that's like,
oh, really? That's such a harsh response.
All you have to do is go over to the infirmary?
No, go to the social hall to talk to somebody.
Talk to a friend. They had a friend
and just say, we'll be a couple minutes late for lineup.
He was a very controlling guy who was, he was going to show his
authority. That's a crazy response. It's just like, no, not even like, no, come on, I'll let you do it.
Yeah, so we bit our lip and kind of just dealt with stuff for a long time.
You guys were going to, like, pay a call.
Exactly.
To see a hurt friend.
Yeah, we were bummed.
We were bummed.
Not only fix it, we wanted to make it right.
Right. Yeah. So with that in mind, again, this is just sort of like that whole, like, you guys talk about having Jack Stellerman, and there's all these different great, head counselors for the seniors, group leaders for the seniors. We did not have
No, you guys got a really bad draw in terms of owner.
We did not have that. I mean, it really
We called him for years and years after Swago for like a decade of making phony phone calls, hanging up,
We did whatever we could. Constantly. We would call it.
But anyway, so after Sheldon made us the offering, we had the issue with Jeff Balkan. That night, we're in our bunk, or was the next night?
Like in bed, like late. It's probably like midnight.
And all of a sudden, and Timmy walks in. Now, Timmy's like a legend.
This is all the same day?
Yeah, Timmy. Or the next day.
Two, 48 hours.
And Timmy, who's only really pretty much a year or 2 years older than us at most, a year and a half, he walks in with a woman.
His girlfriend.
She was cute. But,
thank God. And again, honestly, for us, It was like we're in our beds.
We're in our beds, like, in our underwear, and Timmy's in the girl. Like, it's Timmy!
Honestly, there was nothing cool about it.
Right. So you weren't encouraging this, like, Timmy, stay and hang out.
You didn't want Timmy. We were all like,
I don't really remember it that way. I agree with you. I thought it was novel.
I was a little more shy.
I thought it was novel. Timmy had the girl on a bunk. We were talking about Timmy. I mean, Timmy didn't have his soccer goalie shirt on, but.
That's what I'm picturing.
But anyway, Timmy's talking to us with the girl.
You would never think, though, in that second, though, you were doing anything wrong.
Right.
It wasn't like, right? It wasn't like, your girls. There was nothing
like,
there.
Like, you better get out of here. This is going to get us in trouble.
Right. Anyway, Stan, Sheldon's lover.
Have we addressed that?
No.
Well, Stan and Sheldon are lovers.
I think it's presumed.
Sheldon bought the cab. Stan's his lover. Right. Nothing wrong with that. And they stayed lovers until the day Stan died, which wasn't too many years ago.
Bless his soul.
Yes, bless his soul.
His turn. Okay.
So anyway, Stan walks in, and I cannot tell you. It was as if he saw,
us having sex with girls from Swatona on our bed.
He's like, what is he doing in here?
Oh, my God!
And he storms out.
Freaks out and leaves?
Red face freaks out.
He told Timmy to get out of here. Stormed out. He says, you guys are in trouble.
Oh, my God.
And stormed out.
But he must have hated Timmy.
No, I think he just, I don't know what.
What?
We hadn't even ever thought
of that, to tell you the truth.
I never thought of that. It was a little stunning.
I don't even think he knew that. I think it was more of a girl in our bunk.
If it was David Allen, it would have been the same thing.
And I think if it was just Timmy.
Well, hated.
I think if it was just Timmy. It would have been okay. But the girl in our bunk was somehow freaked him out. Like, oh my God, there's a girl in
here. Yeah, we were just, we're laying in our underwear, embarrassed under our covers. You know, left Timmy with a girl, right? Yeah.
It never, like, that was my point about it didn't feel risque or like we were doing anything.
Or like, look at us.
Right, we were the good guys, you know. Anyway.
So
they docked us from a couple of nights of social. Like, it was another notion of the continued
things
friction.
Are bad now.
It became worse and worse in terms of Balkan. Again, the instructional swim. I mean, you guys were second year seniors, and you know the guys who before you were second year seniors or seniors. Imagine them doing instructional swims second period when you're cold.
52
and you couldn't sit. And it's cloudy. You couldn't sit on the ski slope. The ski slope doesn't come yet
because we're at activity.
No, but you couldn't even sit there during swim. I'm just saying it wasn't a place you could go be.
Yeah.
I don't remember it even in the end.
No, Adam, it wasn't.
I remember it like you do the lab test the first day, and that was basically it. Yeah, instructional swim.
He keeps mentioning we couldn't sit on the ski slope. That came later. Let me tell you why. Instructional swim, we had
and
to swim.
I'm talking about general swim at every fourth and seventh period.
I've survived this long, I'm okay.
I know, but I'm talking about general swim, we couldn't even sit on the swim.
Wait, we're having two separate conversations.
Anyway, so let's fast forward a little bit. There's some confrontations with Balkan, some bad talking, you know, nothing much. There was one day, could have been fifth period, sixth period.
No, hang on.
Sorry?
May I just say one thing?
It was fourth period.
I just want to say one thing. During this whole time, though, we are getting ready for the Cuyuma Under 16 tournament.
It wasn't
Lenny's
Cuyuma.
The captain. Whatever.
Starlight now.
Whatever it is.
We got into that with
Lenny's the captain of the team. Duke is the coach of the team. And so one of the positive things at camp that is going on is that our team is prepping. We have a good team and we're sort of heading in the direction for the tournament.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well,
go ahead.
We felt very capable that year to win the hockey tournament under 16, the soccer tournament, softball. We knew we were screwed in basketball. For the record, we ended up winning hockey and we ended up winning soccer. We won both of those. But anyway, that's just shows you how athletic we are. Anyway.
It's all the stretching.
And
so we're getting ready.
And I aged that. I couldn't even play.
Playing better than the instruction. Apparently it was paying.
No. We were already good.
Paying off.
We remember.
We had Monge for hockey and for soccer. We had the Philadelphia group.
I was thinking about Monge. You think like, this is a little side thing. Like, I don't think there was anybody at Swago, like you say, who the best athlete was, but anybody at a particular sport, was Monge the best at hockey as compared to anybody else?
He was the best at hockey. Like, Paul Allen was the best American at soccer.
Did Monge go on to play hockey in his career?
No, but he still plays ice hockey.
He didn't play college hockey.
No,
he still plays ice hockey. Really good ice hockey player.
Field goals for Ohio.
That's true. Okay,
That's true.
We didn't really.
So I brought up the right example.
No, but at camp, I think what Harry was saying at camp in the Equinox hockey tournament, like in their dining room. They did. They used to do stop the Monge chants on the nights before they played us. That's how good he was.
But
back to our.
So it must have been fifth, sixth period. And, we want, or free period, whatever, we wanted to sit on the ski slope, as we all have done. And Jeff Balkan comes out, he goes, there's no sitting on the ski slope. Points his finger, we're like, Jeff, this is where we sit, blah, 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 blah. He's like, no one's sitting here. If you sit here, you're docked tonight for the social. And again.
But wait,
You've been sitting on it for weeks, though.
No.
We could not sit on the ski
the
slope
the entire time.
During general swim.
No, it varied. See, Balkan wasn't always consistent. He was just... sometimes he was just being...
He got in bad moods. Yeah.
Just being a dick, controlling.
Yeah.
And Holtzman knew that better than any of us. So the ski slope came. We said, but Jeff, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he says, you're going to be... You know, how to go to social, you're docked. And Mark Holtzman at that point...
But this was the thing. We could sit 1 inch away from the ski slope,
I'm going to say that.
Okay.
So Mark Holtzman turns to us and says, I can't believe... So we could sit 1 inch from this ski slope, as you said, Adam. But we can't sit on it. Holtzman says that's bullshit. Holtzman sits on it, but Adam and myself, Monge, whoever it might be, everybody else... doesn't.
We were pussies.
Look back. Big mistake.
This is where it all started with Holtzman standing out.
Exactly. And Holtzman says, if I could sit an inch away from the...
Some have called
him. He said if I could sit an inch away from the ski slope, I could sit on the ski slope.
That would be the three of us.
We're not CTA. I think he's been called it a couple of times.
So Balkan turns around and says, Mark Holtzman, you're Doc from Canteen. Okay. This gets a little bit worse from our perspective in terms of us doing the right thing by Holtz. We all go to Canteen.
Wait. But during this time also, there's already conversation starting. Didn't we talk to...
Why didn't you say that?
The Tom Taylor stuff, that all happens the next day.
Oh, you're introducing my character too rapidly.
Yes. Sorry.
So we go to Canteen at night. We go for the social. You know, we're all excited. And all of a sudden, Mark Holtzman walks in. Jeff Balkan says,
We are sitting. Do you remember him walking through those doors that slammed shut?
I know that noise.
Oh, loose hinges. It's the loose hinges.
And they swing and slam.
Yep.
And Holtzman comes walking in and goes right to the counter to Mr. G. And Balkan looks like he's like, oh my God, I can't believe he's actually here. And it's funny because Holtzman's making his order to Mr. G, and Jeff runs to the bar and he says to Mr. G, don't serve him. And Mr. G doesn't know what the hell is going on. He's like,
oh, Mr. G, when was he ever in the middle of something?
He's laughing.
He's like, oh. He's like, then he takes the corner out of his ear, whatever he used to do.
He did. He
had to see a video of
the cauliflower.
And then he looks, and Balkan looks at me and says, if you don't leave this canteen right now.
To Mr. G?
If you don't leave this canteen right now, and I guess the under 16th game is the next day.
Yes,
and he says to Holtzman, "You are not playing in the under 16th. Now let me just say,
Holtzman is our big guy for the under 16 tournament. Our power forward. Mm-hmm. Holtzman was a good basketball player. So we finally
he's also a second year senior. He's our guy. He's an L.A.er.
I just said that.
No, you said something about him being a bad guy.
Well, we didn't stand behind him as an L.A.er. Here we are at Canteen after right.
It's terrible.
So anyway, we... just finished my story.
It's important.
That Holtzman leaves. We say to Holtzman, again, we probably did the wrong thing. We said, Mark, you can't be banned from this. We don't want you thrown out of camp. Go back to the bunk. Probably should have went back to the bunk with him. We did not.
I just want to remind you of what you're doing when you start bitching about what I did during the game coaching.
No. Let's go there. Because you were wrong as well.
Adam did that.
You were wrong as well.
Adam was a big talker, but let me say, Adam wasn't eligible for the under 16 basketball tournament. If it was a band thing that he was eligible for, he'd be like, we can win this.
You know, here we go. We're going with the negative.
It's negative. Say, dude did the wrong thing.
We're going to get there. Let's just get there. Just like we did the wrong thing.
We're going to take a pause. We'll
be right back.
We're back. We're talking about Holtzman. Holtzman's in the canteen.
What are you?
Out.
Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
All right. So Holtzman goes back to the bunk. Unfortunately, again, we didn't go back with him. But Holtzman, listen, at the end of the day...
Did he ask you to, and you said no?
Holtzman walked to his own drum a bit, and he took a bigger stand than we did. Listen, it wasn't like Holtzman was going to be with the ladies and the social, you know. So we had a little...
I don't sense Holtzman's a guy who couldn't hang out by himself for a little
right.
The point is, look, I think what Lenny's saying, the point is this, though. At the end of the day, there was something...
Let me paraphrase.
There was something, giant going on. And Holtzman saw it, and we didn't.
Right. No, he's got a handle on it. It's a ridiculous situation. It's just
We were grasping at the smaller picture of having our socials.
Yeah.
He was seeing the big picture. Which, you know, in the turn, he never came back to camp, but he did. But anyway.
We'll get there.
Apologizing for it.
I feel, listen.
So I guess we did do the right thing then by listen, pussies.
Thirty years later, Holtzey's being honored. To me, he is the true Swigger hero.
Enough said. Time does weed out the phonies.
It does.
And the real.
No, I wouldn't say we're phonies by any means. Holtzey was as real as you can get.
We're not living this lie.
We were not as real as you can get. Right. Holtzey was as real as you could possibly be.
Let's say this. Once we finally became active, in some ways we were more effective due to our ability to speak.
What?
I can't handle
it. I don't totally agree. Again, I think Holtzey, we were very separated from Holtzey and us.
Okay, let's keep going. So Holtzman goes back.
Holtzman goes back.
I love you, brother.
Next day, you know, he's banned from the Swago 16 basketball tournament. We don't know for sure.
But wait a minute, I'm confused.
Okay. Well, Adam's going to
speak. You weren't sure when you were sending him back that it was
guaranteed? I think he wasn't allowed to play in the under 16 basketball
this was something
team.
Else.
But again, Balkan was kind of, you know, again, you never, like I said before, he was never consistent.
No, but they said he couldn't play.
Yeah, I remember he couldn't play.
And we had talked to, and we started at that moment to say, okay, this is not right. There's no way that these couple of events should keep Holtzman from playing under 16 basketball.
Right.
So then all of a sudden a conversation happens, and I think it even happens out at the ski slope. But a conversation
in the early morning.
In the morning. And the conversation starts to happen where we say, you know what? And again, Lenny's right. I was not playing. I was 16.
We were hosting
the home game first round. And we started
this
to say...
This is why I never knew you were as good as you are at basketball. I didn't see it.
Keep it incognito.
We were starting to say that if they don't let Holtzman play, we're going to go out on the court, we'll get ready to tip, and if they don't let Holtzman... Then we're going to say, we're not jumping without Holtzman.
How was this discussed and communicated amongst like the entire
group? A few of us were talking about it. Lenny,
you said Sheldon
the
will
captain
be embarrassed by the other team coming.
Right, you're hosting. Yeah,
because I thought about this last time. It's so funny how we honored the rule that you had to be under 16 to play. I guarantee you Tyler Hill had 16-year-olds.
Yeah, I think if you were a camper, you were good to go. But there was I did the same thing.
It's funny we honored the rule. But that morning, again, we went to breakfast. We looked at our activities. We had instructional swim.
Oh yeah, we had instructional.
So myself and Dennis Schaefer, myself at that point being one of the stars of the under 16 team. At home, I was not a basketball player. At Swago, I was a star, which, you know, we've all probably encountered.
A star, I understand.
So anyway, Dennis and I go to the infirmary, and we decide we're going to paint the purple X's on our hands so we don't have to go into instructional swim. So Dr. Jim is in the office. He goes to the other room. We paint the purple X's. As we're painting the X's, Sheldon walks in and flips out. Take it out.
It was almost as if you didn't want to play in the basketball tournament. I don't mean to...
No, it's just weird timing.
No,
it's just weird. Stan walking in the bunk and then Sheldon walking in while he's doing
not
the purple X.
How many times have you ever done
this was a mini protest to the whole swimming thing.
We didn't think about it. Knowing that you had a game later.
Dude,
that day.
I'm 15 years old.
We didn't totally
believe
never.
It. I didn't want to play in the basketball tournament. I grew up in Cayuma.
And you're absolutely right. But we just didn't equate the two events, and it was a really stupid thing.
Who thinks Sheldon's going to walk in as
because
you're
doing because
at this point, I could have been what?
At this point, Sheldon.
In the end, everything's meant to be.
Hang on. Really, so at this point, Sheldon's punishment is then to say to Dennis and Lenny, you are in the infirmary through the rest of the day. You're not playing in the basketball tournament. And it was hard to argue about that.
I always thought that was just
doing
punishment.
It wasn't just punishment. So they were in the infirmary.
Well, it's just to the fact that he's keeping me... On one point that I broke the rules. On the other hand, he's keeping me in the infirmary with sick kids. Which
it seems odd.
That's odd. But you know, if I'm the owner and somebody's like paying
you
up, putting their own infirmary,
I know. But if you're a bad kid, like your kid had to stay in the infirmary with sick kids,
it was clear that you can only get that up there. That's why they went up there, and that's how they got busted.
Anyway,
weird way to
so
brand
wait.
You.
The other camp shows up.
No, wait. Awesome. Hang on. Can I just jump back a second?
You could always jump back.
This was a mistake, too. There was a counselor who was a second-year counselor who was a senior counselor
Year.
Tom Taylor. We told him about our plan to boycott the game. Now,
you chose that. That was your choice.
It was a mistake.
What was his involvement in the game?
He was almost like a secondary head counselor.
He was Sheldon's biggest
brownie. So we were trying to get him to... They called him the athletic director.
We were naive. Would you say we were naive?
We were naive.
That's right. He was the athletic director.
He was the athletic director.
You weren't going to be athletic.
This was, again, to bolster some of Marty's inadequacies.
Okay.
It's a mistake.
So...
How come we weren't
We told him... which was a mistake also because we believe
no,
we believe. We believe
now, however, I was in charge of instructional swim. you
were a tyrant.
I was the guy. Backstroke. These guys, you guys aren't treading water long
enough.
We had to tread water. A second year seniors, we had to tread water. Second period.
I had the guys in the poles waiting to catch it.
Those bamboo poles were great.
So we.
You should have asked Arnie Heller about John Hartman. I wonder what his take was on Johnny Hartman.
This, we're going all over. Maybe
I think Arnie was there for a lot of John Hartman. I think it might have been 1 year of overlap.
I think we should Johnny stay. Hartman we're getting. We're get, I think we should stay focused.
Do you know who John Hartman is? No. Okay.
I know some of the cops.
Who?
Who's that?
I do have a cop story.
So Lenny and Dennis are locked in the infirmary.
Locked. Okay. Lock and key.
They're locked in the infirmary.
That cop story later, by the way.
They're sitting on the porch in the infirmary. We were actually consulting them about our plan. Remember talking? We were talking through the bushes. And
I was on the porch.
Without the light. It's weird. You remember the porch and the infirmary? We were going next to the fern trees. We're like, what should we do? Because Lenny's up there. We couldn't even really conference anymore.
Let's speed it up, though. So the other camp arrives.
So the other camp arrives. And we had told Tom Taylor. Wait,
you didn't say, and who's the coach of the under 16 team?
Alan.
Okay.
We said that last time. We didn't say it this time.
And. Clap. It's
sorry.
And so we make the decision half-heartedly that if they don't let Holtzman play, we're not going to jump ball. And then Jake starts, Jeff Jacobson, not Larry Jacobson, starts freaking out. Because this is a big thing under 16. And he was a good player. And he maybe...
But he wasn't... For the record...
You're taking away his...
He was not the true center that you guys spoke about podcasts before. Mm-hmm. You actually gave Jeff Jacobson credit that he was a true center.
He wasn't. Not.
I thought he was a good ball player.
You used the words true center.
All right.
However,
pardon me.
Mike Bitterman.
Was there a guy who was a true center?
Mike Bitterman.
Oh, well.
Yeah, Shell Haas for it. But anyway,
Shell Haas? So...
Little tidbit.
So we go...
He was a good ball player, too? Still is.
Digressing. John Lehman, be quiet.
So we go to the social hall. Now, Monge and I are not playing. Monge is not on the team, and I'm not there.
Yeah, Monge was a great athlete, was not a great basketball player.
Right. And Jeff Jacobson says, he puts this caveat. He says, if we can clearly beat them, if they're really small, and it's clear that we can definitely win, let's play, because then Holtzman can play the next game. So this was sort of our give, because that was the plan.
But now,
subjective.
I was
though.
Out and Holtzman
right.
was out.
That's why it was a good argument. Yeah.
Two of our starters were out. Two of our main starters.
Right. Because Lenny's out too. That didn't really count towards the plan because he was justifiably busted.
Right.
So it was sort of like a weird thing. So we go in and we go into the social hall and they see, who was it? Lavi?
No, that's not Lavi. I think it was a regular one. I think it was like a Starlight or
whoever it is. They come in, they're a little short. Jeff immediately starts screaming, we can definitely beat them, we can definitely beat them, we can definitely beat them.
He was right, which he was right.
We lost.
No, we beat them.
No, we
did not. We lost.
Wait. Did we? Yeah. It's a big.
I feel like you guys left.
I think we lost. Because I don't remember a second game.
Hang on.
I don't remember a second game. Yeah.
But we'll get to that. So we're going to play. Monge and I come to the game, and we start cheering for the other team.
Not
unprecedented,
cool.
Obviously.
Right. Cool.
And we're sitting on the bench, and me and Monge were heckling our team.
I didn't know you did that.
And cheering for the other team.
Well,
we were so aggravated. We were aggravated. And so you were pissed. And we were so we're heckling our guys.
Do you think Freddie Roseman would have done that?
And then, I don't know. Come on, this is serious. This is the beginning. This is it.
I'm not saying it's not.
Well, then
this is just for y'all to know, the rest of everything you've heard up to now was really not the story. It starts right around here.
But this is great. This is where we can almost start going to time. Assume this is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon.
He's wearing what were you wearing? A white t-shirt?
I don't know what I was wearing, but we go to the game. We start heckling. Alan gets really mad. He runs over to us during the game and he picks Mongeloo.
You weren't interfering with the game.
You weren't heckling. You threw the ball to who?
I do remember something like that.
I did not do that.
Somebody did something.
Well, whatever you guys.
Okay. So
you don't think
Alan,
your own team is stepping over a little
Duke,
bit?
Like, no, no, because that's. I think if you mess with the game, like you throw the ball out the window or some shit
Duke,
like that, it's bad. Yeah.
Duke gets so upset. He carries Monge out of the social hall. And then I go out after Monge. I'm not going to heckle alone. No, there's no alone.
Where's Holtzie?
Unclear. In my mind.
So,
so So the game finishes, and I believe we lose. I think we lose. I actually think
I
we lose.
I thought we won because I thought we played again. Remember Duke bailed on coaching us against the track meet. We played Jeffrey Dichter, whatever his name is.
No.
And Duke bailed on the game because he had a day off, so he didn't coach us. I think you're wrong.
That was loyal.
No, I'm just being honest. I knew that came afterwards. All right. I think he's wrong.
Maybe
we won,
maybe we lost. It doesn't matter. I think we lost.
We won, but it's irrelevant.
Okay. So then after the game, we're sitting out like sort of where the Frosch playground is up there with the monkey bars.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there. I think Monge is sitting there. Alan's sitting there. Maybe you're sitting too, Harry. But I know you're sitting there. We're sort of going over. You apologized.
Oh, I do remember. Yes.
You apologized.
I thought we were on main campus at this point, no?
It was in between Storybook Tree and like the playground.
Okay.
It was right in there. And so you were sort of saying, I'm sorry I had to do that. And we were like, I get it. It was okay. And you're still locked in the infirmary.
Yes.
And Sheldon is walking up from the social hall sort of towards his house. And he looks at me. He looks at me. He looks at me and he says, I don't know if this has been revealed here, and this is not meant in any kind of a negative way. No, he's a stutterer.
Oh. He's a gay stutterer.
Sheldon is a stutterer. He's a gay stutterer, but he was a stutterer. Mm-hmm.
No, he spoke a little femme.
He did.
Nothing wrong with that.
But, and look, any of the references now, and let's make this disclaimer.
Yeah, it's all
any of the references now to stuttering or homosexuality are not meant in a derogatory way. They're just meant as part of the story.
Right.
Okay?
For now it is. We use them in a derogatory way in the past.
With him.
Yes, I was.
But they're not. They weren't almost. It just. It is what it is. We're 15.
I have no apologies.
So Sheldon starts walking up, and he looks at me, and he says, "Mr. Liebner, call your father." And I'm like, "Whoa, call my father!"
All right? Did he call me?
Yeah, I mean, that's a rare request. To tell him that, something can clearly transpire. And I look at you guys, and I'm like, "Wow!" And I go up to the phone.
Had you done something though in the interim?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. During the basketball game, after we had been thrown out, all the players that played and sort of defied the directive. Maj and I took their beds and threw them in the boogie line.
Again, not cool.
Pointing out, though.
Not we really did.
Cool. All right,
threw it into what?
Boogie line. You know, like right in between the trees and the porch, right in front of your porch.
It's a bad place.
That's where you didn't work. That's why it's boogie land. So that's why we all got thrown in boogie land.
Boogie land.
And so then this conversation takes place, and he goes, "I'm Mr. Liebman, call your father." So I go up to the phone. I go up to the phone. This is like right in that like half hour before lineup and dinner. And I go up to the phone, and I get on the phone, and my father's like, what's going on? And I call him at his Fire Island home, and I call him, and he goes, what's going on? I said, well, I don't know. What's going on? He goes, they want to throw you out of camp. I'm like, what? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, yeah. He said that you're causing an insurrection. I said, what does that mean? And I said, look, this is what's going on, but I don't understand. So I'm getting thrown out of camp at this point.
How'd you hang up?
I put the phone back on the receiver.
Thank you for the clarity.
You're the only one being singled out
right now.
No, that's all I know.
That's as far as he knows. Lenny's still there. I have been now, you know, at least in that zone.
No, at that point we found out, I believe.
What's Holtzman up to at this point?
I believe at that point Holtzman's parents were also called.
Okay.
And Holtzman's being thrown out. The only problem
But we don't know that.
Holtzman.
No, you're wrong. Wait, hang on, you're wrong. You got it. You're in the infirmary. You're wrong. Let me finish. Let me finish. But I'll tell you why. I'm going to get to it. It's an important part of the story. So I start during this. I'm getting to it. It's not there yet. It's not there yet. So I'm walking back. And lineup blows. So all the seniors are coming up, and I'm like a little flipped out because at this point I think I'm going home. And so everyone's coming up, and I say, I look at Holtzman. I look at some other people. And Lenny's not there, and I'm like, they're throwing me out of camp. I'm getting thrown out of camp.
Were you the mayor?
I was the mayor.
But that was definitive at your end of the call with your dad?
Well, I mean, it was pretty clear.
What's going on? Or it's like, no, I'm coming up to pick you up tomorrow.
I don't remember exactly how final it was at that moment, but it felt like I was getting thrown out of camp to me. Because then I went up to lineup, and Balkan, first of all, he looks at me, and he looks at Holtzman and goes, you guys disgust me.
What?
You could
really
throw the beds of your teammates into the bushes like that, and he's so disgusted. And I'm starting to actually... You know,
he's the cause of it. So
wait, Howie, can I jump in a couple of days before that? Because that's the Balkan picture. We went to blows with Balkan up by the... what was the
some camp I got
what was the bench by the office? Remember?
Bench by the office. Yeah.
Dragon bench. Do you know what I mean? By the tree trunks, whatever. Remember, we had a face to face with Balkan. I went face to face. I remember I was crying. It's how bad Balkan got under my dress. We went face to face with him. This is a couple days before that. We have that picture. Remember that infamous picture we bring into our tent?
Right.
On every CT?
I thought that was right from the. I thought that was from that night. I think that's right now.
I was wearing an Indiana
sweatshirt. Oh, I said, yeah, I think that's when the phones are getting shut off. That's later on.
That's right during that night. You're early again. Lenny is forecasting the future. So he gets upset at me, and I'm looking at him, and I'm sort of sitting on the ground near his feet, and he's yelling at me still, and he's sort of... And then I'm starting to cry a little bit, because I'm like, holy shit, I'm going home from camp.
And I got my head counseled.
And my head is down, and Holtzman stands up and gets right up in Balkan's face.
Holtzman again, baby.
Mm. Holtzman gets right up in Balkan's face, and he goes, I think he says, "What are you laughing at, motherfucker?"
He said, "What the fuck?"
And he looks at Balkan in the face. "What are you laughing at?"
Holtzman was a big guy for those who
don't know. Right, an experience with nunchucks.
Really big guy, probably bigger than Balkan. And Balkan looks at Holtzman, and he just says, "You're out of here too."
Right.
And so that's where we figure Holtzman's thrown out, and I'm thrown out.
At that point, I think that's correct. At that point, Adam and Holtzman come to the infirmary.
And we tell them what's going on
from around the porch at Diamond 3, and they're telling me, "We're both thrown out." So he said, "What do you mean we're both thrown out?" So Holtzman yells at me, "Get off the porch!"
Well, now everyone's gone into dinner. I'm just saying everyone has gone into dinner.
All right, tell the story.
No, keep going. Go. I'm just saying, the rest of the camp is in dinner.
The rest of the people are in dinner.
Where was everybody else?
It was pot roast.
They're in dinner.
So after lineup, they went to the mess hall. Got it.
Right. Okay. Now go.
So Holtzman looks at me, says, and Holtzman pretty much...
Holtzman's standing at the pine trees. Holtzman's standing at the pine trees.
Dude, I know that you just shut up.
I have a suggestion. Let him do a minute or two, and then you can fix some facts if you want.
A little overzealous.
Go ahead. Stop talking for a second.
Okay, Lynn, go ahead.
You were locked in the infirmary during this whole session.
Lynn, go ahead.
Go.
Really? I knew where Holtzman talked to me.
Go.
So Holtzman was on Diamond 3.
No, it was Diamond 3 and a quarter.
Where the pine trees were. He's got it wrong. That's and Holtzman yells at me. I forgot the interchange was, but Holtzman yells at me and he says, "Get off the porch now." And again, Holtzman yelled at me to get off the porch. I got off the porch. Sheldon came running up to me because Sheldon was still hovering outside somewhere. "Get back on the porch or you're thrown out of camp." And what did I say to him, Adam? You could jump in there.
Like, again, Sheldon's right there.
Right there.
He was running out. He's running out of the
mess.
I said to Sheldon, "Get the fuck out of my face." Something like that. I cursed at him.
No, you know what you did?
You and your brother.
I started laughing.
You just started laughing at him.
You grew up in a profane household.
So at that point,
he comes running out and Sheldon says, "You get on that porch, you're going home," and Lenny just starts laughing at him.
So at that point, Dennis stayed on. Dennis stayed on.
"You go home."
It was Adam, myself, and Holtzman.
Next
thing I know, my mom calls. I pick up the phone. I think it was in the HQ or the office, wherever it was. This is the first call. My mom says, "What's going on with your boozy?" I said, "I don't, he's obviously being a dick, Mom." You know, my mom didn't question me. She knew how much I love Swago and how much I wanted to be there. I laid under the covers in the dark for a week after I would come home. She knew how much I loved Swago, And I said, just blah, 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 let me see what happens. And then all of a sudden, things just started to unravel rather quickly.
Well, part of what happens, too, is people start coming out of dinner. And we're like, me and Lenny and Holtzman are thrown out. We're thrown out. I think this is a good time, Howie.
All right, we're going to pause.
Let's take 30 seconds. Take a break.
This is when it really
rolls
off
the rails. Here's a word from our sponsor.
We'll be right back.
All right,
we're back. Oh, God, Zoom tight.
Bless you.
You're allergic.
All right, guys.
Excuse me.
So let's...
We had spoken about... All right, so we're all... So
Adam, myself, Lenny. That's me.
Holtzman, we're all thrown out of camp.
You're thrown out. You talk to your mom.
And the mess hall is now letting out from dinner. Everyone's coming out. We're kind of standing there.
Do you know how you're going home at this point? Or you're kicked out and that's to be decided?
We don't know anything. Just that we're kicked out.
All we know is... At this point, we make it down to the waterfront at some point, but at this point, we're just like,
shocked.
We can't believe. Yes, Adam.
I was just going to say, talk about what time this is in relation
good.
To visiting
positive.
Day.
That was okay. Very positive. Okay. You didn't knock him.
No, I learned in the break.
We're working.
He does the whole hand thing.
Yeah.
This was about 4 or 5 days before visiting day. Is that covered out?
Yeah, but it's very relevant, right?
I agree. Okay. Very relevant. Yeah. So anyway, we're in front of the social hall office, and we're flipped out. We're going home, and obviously word is traveling. It's traveling through the younger campers. And,
it's free play now for the most part, right?
Everyone's funneling out of the messer.
It's not. It's more of like
dinner.
Everybody's hanging out by the flagpole, being like flagpole.
Well, but it's during office. Free play.
But, yeah, but it's like literally, people are coming out of the dining room almost a little bit early. Like it's like
right.
Something's going on outside.
Dinner and dinner. No dessert was served.
This is starting to happen in that area.
Pudding that night.
In between the frosh doors. This is happening in that area. In between the frosh doors and the office.
Let's cancel the pudding.
So, I guess at that point.
Anyway,
I don't really. To the mess hall.
I don't know real.
The frosh doors to the mess hall and the office.
What did you just say?
This is where this is all taking place. Visually. All
right, the details. Right. Don't forget. Everybody
between the mess and the office.
Everybody who's listening is from Swago. They have this.
I just want them to know where we are. That's exactly right.
Take a picture.
They know where it is, believe me.
You know those big roots from the tree?
Yes, exactly.
I think if we said the mess hall, really, the mess hall.
You had to watch those suckers, man. Trip on those things.
A good 6 inches.
But that's part of my whole
experience. That's where Lieberman broke his. That's where Lieberman broke his teeth.
No. You might be. You know what, Lenny? You might be right about that. I'm not sure.
Do you listen to our podcast?
I do. It was Canteen Road. I apologize.
I thought it was. It could have been there. The roots are big.
Anyway,
all right.
That was how his big promise as mayor was to file. The
I delivered. Down. I delivered
a light on Canteen Road. Danger. So, what transpired? I think Sheldon. I don't remember. I don't know the sequence of every second.
You want to jump in?
You're going to jump in anyway. Might as well jump in.
No,
with
go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Jump. I'll jump in from you, though.
But he's like, I have nothing.
I'm just saying
to
at this
say.
Point, like you two come out of the mess hall. Everyone's coming out, and it's sort of like, oh my god. Lenny and Holtz are thrown out of camp. And
the mayor.
And the mayor and the deputy mayor and the president of the senior group. I mean, it's West not, this is
go
not
to
an accident. You've got
the
president
sweep.
Of the senior group,
like
the mayor
the president
and the deputy mayor.
Now,
the all being
so we
thrown
come
out,
out
of camp.
Everybody's standing around talking. And it's a negative buzz. People,
of course.
Kids are starting to work.
It wasn't, though. There was a sense of freedom about it.
No, not yet. That happens later.
It wasn't. At that point, even us who got thrown out, we were just like, we're panicked. We're going home. You know, like the reality of going home after you wait 10 months a year.
Of course.
And talk about
you're
it.
In
and this is it. You're done. You're never coming back this way.
We didn't think it wasn't that far thinking. It was more. You were more shocked.
Yeah, we're in the moment still. Right.
So, but the kids start to want to call home to tell their parents what's going on.
Right.
So people start waiting online.
You know, they're lining up at the office where the big roots are.
Dry canteen.
dry canteen. You can buy a toothbrush. To call home. And Sheldon, at that point, after some calls have been decides to shut the phone off.
With some stuff.
Right.
He cuts off all communication.
Because
outside.
People were starting to call home and be like, it's havoc. Something's screwed up. I want to come home on visiting day.
Sheldon,
so the fact that visiting day is 5 days away is a hindrance for him at that point.
So Sheldon, at that point again, proceeds to call our parents. Mark Holtzman, for whatever reason, I can't remember why.
That was such a bad... Just to go back for a second. That's such a bad... Like, that's the first incredibly horrible move on his part.
Oh, it gets
part.
Worse. We
like, shutting the phones
shut
down?
The phones
we
down. Heard like, that what he called... And I guess this... I didn't hear confirmation.
In a state like that.
He called the state troopers.
Wait, this... We're not there yet. This is after...
Mark Holtzman... However he gets them, his noon trunks were confiscated. You know,
that's a good decision.
I
the martial arts.
SGO off also.
Right.
And
the stuff that was coming
however
out
he got them, he got his noon trunks, and he's standing in front of the office, you know, the swing door again where you go in, the main office, not dry canteen on the phone.
With Sylvia Lieberman
sat. And he's doing the noon trunks in front of Sheldon. Sheldon had this big guy. What was his name? Steve?
Steve.
He's like a hillbilly guy.
Yeah, from
Southern
Memphis
guy.
Or something.
Big tall guy.
He was like a center. Steve Mathis.
Tennessee.
Steve Mathis, Myers, whatever he was. He wore overalls with his mustache.
He was a big guy.
He
was one of the bigger guys ever.
He played guitar in the worst sing song ever, remember?
Did he?
He sang that, yeah.
He used to play Rocky, whatever, Tennessee.
No, he played that song in Our Theme for Cold War.
Anyway,
that was him, Steve, whatever. We have his name somewhere.
He's still better than Mark and Noodles.
Standing by Mark Holtzman to make sure he doesn't hurt Sheldon. Knowing Holtzman,
he's the
security.
He became Sheldon's bodyguard at that moment.
But Holtzman getting an inch away from your eye, for the most part, won't touch anyone.
Now, also, at this point, Alan and Howie come out. And they're like, well, you guys have thrown out? We're like, yeah. And you guys begin. Now, I don't... You guys tell this part.
We don't know the whole time sequence of everything. Everything's within a half an hour.
And we're screaming and balking, though, because this is where the picture is. You're up in his face. I mean, we are having screaming matches. We're like, because all of a sudden,
we're
kicked out
guy.
Of camp and you can be disrespectful because what else is going to happen to you? We're like, you're a fucking asshole. You fucked up our camp. I mean, it was getting like very like for 15 or 16
years. You have nothing left to
yelling
lose.
Into a 35-year-old teacher's face.
And,
it
as
was
much,
like,
and as much as we dislike shows and stand. Balkan was just, he was press your buttons. He was just such
a just a hateful, dickish guy.
I hated that guy. Like I said, you know,
still
he
do.
Really get your ire up.
And we did him right by his kids. We did him right. I don't make any funnies anymore. We did right by his kids.
That's the cool thing is that the son was untouched through this. There was never an issue with him. He was never like, all right, we're going to tear down him.
And his son was, you know, a cute kid. Right. Anyway.
He was not a cute kid.
And then he was a little attracted to him. That's why I live alone.
Remember when he wore the white Vito tank top?
Blue eyes.
So anyway, Sheldon says your parents are on the phone. Again, my last phone call, my mom, ended with a little bit of a gray area, so I'm on the phone with my mom, Sheila Leibowitz says your mother's on the phone, so I'm on the, so I pick up the phone.
In
the office, and my mom says, you know, I'm doing the hand signal for the phone. My mom says,
now he's in alone. We're all outside.
Alone. I'm wearing a navy shirt. I wear a belt now.
But this is...
Well, thank you. So I'm on the phone with my mom. My mom's like, you know, what's going on? You know, you're thrown out. You're coming home. My mom, again, understood my love for Swago. There was no question that
right. She
knew I didn't do anything really wrong at that point. And all of a sudden, Sheldon picks up the phones as if the conference in. He's two desks in front of me. And he's like, I forgot what he said. Anyway, I'm, you know...
Something like... Nothing wrong, like, you did this.
Mrs. Bender,
this is nonsense, he's leaving.
I just scream at Sheldon, like, hang the fucking phone up.
But you do hear him, in on your conversation with mom.
He's like, you know, with his whiny fucking voice.
He couldn't help himself.
He was listening, and he couldn't help himself and had to interject himself to hear him.
You were just like, get off the fucking phone.
Get the fuck off the phone. I'm talking to my mother. My mother was just like that. You gotta calm down. You don't understand. And again, my mom, I guess, understood. So I get off the phone and I'm going home. I walk out of the office. Adam will take it from here.
You want me to take it from here?
Because there you go. Big.
Mr. Ted.
He walks out of the office. He's on the top step of the office. And there's a lot of people sort of crowded around the front door of the office. And he gets out of the office and Sheldon is standing at the door too, like maybe on the second step with Stan. And he puts his hand on Lenny's arm.
Why don't you just calm down? Something like that.
Why don't you just calm down? And Sheldon, and Lenny looks at Sheldon, and there's probably 60 campers watching this. And Sheldon says to Lenny, and Lenny says to Sheldon,
I said, get your fucking hand off me. I don't know where your fucking hand has been. So, you know, some people may say, and I remember this on the website, they're like, you know, you shouldn't have said that.
You went further.
I go further later on. I was 15 years old. This guy, I said everything I should have said.
And the fact that he actually did touch you. Like,
don't touch me.
Can I jump in? Because you're being modest here.
I wish you'd jump in.
Lenny says,
get
your hands off me. I don't know where those hands have been. You're a fucking gay. And he looks at the crowd and he says, I want the whole camp to know it. Sheldon is a fucking gay. And then at that point, sort of spontaneously, the 50 people standing near the door, at least 50 people standing around the door, all of a sudden start sort of chanting, homo, 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 and pointing at Sheldon.
Can I jump in for one sec?
And I know this sounds like an exaggeration.
Let me jump in for one second. Everything that I did, I have zero regrets. So if anyone's going to do your Facebook thing, say, you shouldn't have said gay. We went through this on the website. Very just in what we did. Go on.
I would if my son did not be proud of his son at this point, if he was pushed to the limit
and had to make a stand again. Waited so long for this to happen. He pushed every button.
It wasn't necessarily the right rally cry. It was everybody. I'm saying the homo chant wasn't necessarily the right rally cry, but it was symptomatic. It was really.
In a weird way, it almost wasn't hateful. It was hateful to him, but not to gays in general. I always say, if there was one place where a gay camp owner would have made it, it would have been Swago. The guy was cool and said, you know, I'll keep the traditions going, I think Swago would have run with that.
That was the first gay slur we made from Sheldon. There was one other.
I mean, there was one time, obviously gay guy.
Let me tell you what happened. 2.5 weeks after Swago started, we went to Punch Ball. got all muddy. So afterwards, you get naked, you go swimming in the lake. So as all the seniors swimming in the lake, we're coming up now, we're finished, and Sheldon starts walking down, and Mon just looks at Sheldon and he goes, "Ah, Sheldon, you're late. Sorry, you missed the show." That was the only like comment that was made to Sheldon. We made no gay slurs, nothing like that. Enough, we didn't care.
Hey, so let's hear it for us.
Well, let me say, now I don't know.
Just
how
a good comeback on him.
I don't know how many parents would send their kids to a boys' camp that's owned by two.
Well, we've been to that. And,
I've been to it on
the homo kid.
When you only owned it.
So just picture again, you know, and let's just live it for the crowd for a second. Homo. 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 Yeah, no. Well, I don't know. It's a radio play to me. To me, it's a radio play.
You like. All right,
you
guys
start again?
Homo. 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 So Sheldon is in the middle of the circle, and he starts to, like, almost, like, conduct us in some way.
I remember that.
He's conducting, he's trying to keep a pretty face.
He's embracing the taunt.
He was embracing
in a very feminine manner.
He's trying to taunt us back.
In some ways, I don't know.
You don't want to go into conducting when they're calling you homo. Like,
no, but he was okay with it. I think he loved it. I think he loved it.
By the way,
it's like, what are you talking about?
And it's walking right also.
You have time. He started to break dance.
At that time,
go Sheldon.
Balkan, we still wanted to punch in the face. Sheldon, we did not. It was the difference, right? Different caliber of hate.
Yes.
Balkan was...
Both hate. So at that point...
That's not mince words.
Alan and Howie, I think, have quit at this point. Because at this point...
Yeah, you came
the
out
Eagles,
to us and you told us
the
you
The Eagles are starting to hear that the two bunks that belong to Alan and Howie, I think, start getting really upset because they're counselors.
Alan and I don't know even how that we, because we went up to be counselors together and we somehow got in the same group. We were the Eagles.
Yeah, next door neighbors.
And I think it was just fortuitous. I don't even think we went through the effort of even requesting it. And it just
we said this in a previous podcast.
All right. Yeah. Anyway,
I like that.
So that's, but it's crucial because we're both in the Eagles. So if we both leave,
which is a little bit of astonishing considering you guys were never in the bunk together except in LA, which you said in a podcast. I never knew that.
L6, I think, right?
I like that.
Two years together.
Now your council's together. I'm sorry.
So in the next
one,
you can join bunks. C11, C13. So I get the word that Lenny's been kicked out of camp, and I know the reason. I know he did the thing with the infirmary, and it just seems like he really going to kick the guy out of camp for that. So, you know, I think the best thing to do for me is to quit and just say, listen, you know, I don't remember what I said to Sheldon. I don't remember the act of resigning.
But I don't think it was about the infirmary thing. No. I think you realized the stand at that point.
Well,
it was about time.
My brother being kicked out of camp as a second year senior was the straw. I mean, I don't even considering thinking I was going
to
quit
before that. I don't want to cheapen the thing with the writing of the X on the hand. It was like that was a bad assignment. That's not why we were thrown out of camp.
No, that's why I'm quitting too. Like, listen, I think, I don't know, what I would have done, had Lenny been caught with alcohol or something else, and it was this incredibly like deserved and reason to be kicked out. But
well, alcohol,
it was unjustified.
No offense, you and Alan bought it for alcohol.
That's not true.
If he got thrown out for the alcohol that we bought him.
Listen.
But that would have been reasonable.
Then I probably would have stayed.
Look, just as a quick aside, when Sheldon called my father, my father said to him, he says, I'm throwing Adam out of camp. My father says to him, at least according to Richie, my father says, Did you catch him doing drugs?
He's
like, no.
Why would he make that
assumption? Did you catch him drinking? Sheldon says no.
Can't believe he made that assumption.
Did you catch him with a girl? Sheldon says no.
Well, that was awesome.
And my father says, well, I'm not taking him back. Because that was pretty much reasons
that,
to
the
be
four reasons.
Out. He goes, no, he's causing an insurrection. The insurrection rule was invoked.
Go ahead. You ever had that one? When you guys were second year seniors, the insurrection?
No.
As Lenny said in an earlier telling of this, at this point,
so
when they quit,
the
you go crying, tears everywhere.
You quit. Well, I quit first, and then you were like, fuck it, I'm going to quit too.
My brother's still there. But it's leaving, and I feel, from a bigger perspective, it feels like the whole thing's imploded. Which it obviously is.
Well, the thing that sticks out most in my mind is the whole thing that they were talking about between the office and the mess hall. Like, just sort of standing
that
there.
Event.
And that,
well, we have
thing
that
is
picture, too.
All breaking down. That's
he's,
true.
He's act, Sheldon's acting how he is. And I'm like, you know, we're buddies. We're there together. Mark's going to stay. He's going to be with his group.
He'll be fine. And it's not that big of a sacrifice for us.
No,
we're out.
So I think we just go over to Brody's house.
Well, because Timmy's there. I guess it's still the visit, right, that he came to your bunk.
It's still a lot of
people. He's the same girlfriend that he brought into our bunk.
I think he did. Okay.
I would
I think
be
this
interested
all
here because you were involved and we were involved.
So
I would be interested in getting Mark as the perspective
Mark
here.
Mark has a stake in next year.
Right.
Because
he's a witness.
Yes, but
a second year
no one's forward thinking.
But what do you feel like is going on? What is your observation of what's going on?
Mark, tell us. Tell us a little bit, Mark Frosty.
You guys have not gone home yet.
I'm trying to play some time.
At that moment on the main campus, do you not even know what we're talking about?
Well, the main campus was the main campus was insane. But I remember going to visit Alan and Howie.
As you were leaving.
No, before you left.
We called them whack.
Say goodbye to us.
C-25, whatever it was.
C-11, C-13.
And I, for some reason, I sort of remember you saying, like, look, you should stay. Your friends, like, you weren't, like, you were kind of not telling me to pick up and leave. You were like, stay and see what happens.
You still have a crew that's out of there.
For the record,
Mark, we were, stay here,
Mark. Thrown out. We were not happy.
Someone's got to stick it out. Make a stand.
I'm going to go out into the field.
But it was interesting. The whole thing was surreal. I mean,
it really was.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, that, I remember that. So that night continues. Adam and myself, actually, it was just you and me. We walked down to the waterfront. We're sitting.
And you just left alone to roam about at this
point. No, go ahead.
This is whatever happened. We sit on the hill
by the outdoor basketball court, in between the basketball court and the waterfront. Please don't interrupt that. So we're standing there. We're just talking. We're crying. Someone else is with us. And we're like, oh my god, we're going home. You know, the reality set in that we're like. We spoke every day. Adam lived in another town than I did, and we spoke every day on the phone. Can't wait to Oswego, every single day. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, this is done. We're done. And we're crying. And all of a sudden, John Hartman comes up and sits with us. He did. And
that's so nice.
I wish to God I could remember what he said, but having John Hartman with us, obviously, still memory for me. I was 15 years old. It was something special about it.
You know, you said awe when I think about
that. I agree.
He was a nice man.
I had very close moments with John. It was like, you know, he would tell you what's for lunch, come watch you all.
He'd get me up to polar bear.
He was also taken back by the whole what was going on.
That's an old timer.
At that point.
Yeah, no, he's been there the whole time I've been there.
And at some point, Sheldon had said to me, you know, you're going to go home tonight.
Lenny said, I want to go home tonight. And I'm like, why don't you just stay? Because my father would not let me be driven home at night.
And
I just take it on the next day.
Ferry.
And now Lenny's like, and he says to me, Ad, I can't stay. He looks at me, I'm like, why don't you just stay? Let's be together tonight. He goes, Ad, I'm freaking out. I can't stay.
Which, looking back, we kind of feel we probably would have gotten into heavy duty trouble that night. Eventually, we come back to Oswego, but that night,
it's probably good that he didn't.
That we'd have messed up. So I went home.
How did you get home again?
Three counselors drove me home. The big guy, Steve May.
Steve May.
Tom Taylor. And one other.
They take a van. They take him in a van all the way to Roslyn.
Two people would have been enough.
At about 10 o'clock at night.
Three people.
I don't know.
They were worried that he was going to go insane like an inmate.
I think they wanted a night out in the city. But anyway, after they dropped me off, they stayed in the city, then came back. But anyway,
Tom Taylor
dropped me off at home the next morning. You know, this is me. I wake up. I'm laying on my couch. MTV just came out. And I'm watching MTV, laying on my couch, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm fucking home. And now all I'm waiting for is Adam to get home, because I know he's going to be home in a few hours. So all of a sudden, I'm laying on my couch, I'm like, it was crazy. I'm gone then, so you could tell your 3-hour story.
It's going to be quick. So Lenny goes home, and I'm by myself at camp, and he packed his trunk and left, and now I'm packing
Holt's
my trunk.
Still there too,
and left.
Though, right?
Holtzman's parents are in Europe.
Right, they can't even get in touch with
him. And his grandparents are home.
He's done for a
week.
His
grandparents are there, and they cannot take him back. They will not take him.
No, we cannot. We refuse to take him.
We refuse to take him. His parents are in Europe, we will not take him. So Holtzman is staying, but will be kicked out when he's acceptable.
When someone takes possession of him.
Crazy.
So the next morning, I'm packing up. Look, there's a lot of people hanging out in L.A. And I'm hanging out. And I'm just getting ready to go. And it's a pretty uneventful night, although stuff was going on outside the camp.
Well, plus
there was a little bit of, like, Halloween hijinks. People were setting off fireworks, doing different things. My John would talk about.
Plus, you were dipping into some of the festivities that we brought up for late nights at Oswego in L.A.
By myself, because Lenny wasn't there. And I was just like, what am I doing?
Rusk Awards knows what that one is.
Rusk Awards.
Rusk Awards?
Rusk Awards.
Yes, does.
Inside man. So
he shouted out on CT that one year he went.
So we, I'm getting all packed up.
Russell
and the works. Next morning, they get me in Sheldon's Mercedes.
Russell DeWorts.
They get me in Sheldon's. They get me in Sheldon's Mercedes with Steve Funtliter driving me home.
Right.
So I get in. I do my thing.
You're more
less
about
security.
Lenny.
Just
Lenny gets get Steve May and Tom Dell. You get the Nature Shack guy.
The PR guy and his son Leslie.
Leslie Funlighter.
Send all the Funlighters. It's Adam.
And the whole time, and wait, hang on one second.
All right, go.
And the whole time, he's just chatting me up, and he's like, this is so terrible, I can't believe this is happening in camp, blah, blah, blah. And he gets me home. Let's stop right from there.
All right, we'll be... Hello, everybody.
Hello. This is Moi. Sorry,
I totally forgot that. And that wasn't even part of the Jake podcast.
And it used to fucking crack me up. I know. When he redid that. That was so fucking
and
then
to a word, he was perfect.
Do you guys do that on the podcast when it's just you two talking? That you look in each other's eyes and talk?
Yeah, just did it.
Usually hold hands.
It's cute. No, it is. You're next to each other on the couch.
There it is. That's when the magic happens.
All right.
For now, that'll be my visual.
Okay.
So Adam is home.
Adam's at home.
You're home.
Your grandfather's waking up that morning.
He's waking me up. No, so I go home that day. Funlighter lets me home, and I start talking to Lenny, and from my perspective at home, I'm talking to Lenny, and it seemed like the people at camp as we left said we're all leaving on visiting day, and we'll all spend the second half of the summer together. We'll take some road trips.
We started planning on going to Philadelphia, going to New Jersey. Like every weekend, we're going to be together.
We were already spinning it.
We assumed everybody's leaving camp, which wasn't the case,
and that everyone could just go to every state by themselves and hang out.
Right. We had it all worked out. Just you can't.
So Adam, for the hours that morning, we spoke about that.
It's a teen tour without any supervision.
We were spinning it positive because we were home.
But then I'm home on the couch, like you said, under the blanket, and then the Porsche pulls up, dude. That's you, right?
Porsche, yeah.
You said that last episode, but it's the truth.
The Porsche
is making it. It's relevant. It's relevant.
Dude, come on.
The official car of the insurrection.
Drive up in the Porsche, and now it's us three together hanging out.
And I'm alone.
Right? So, nothing's changed except it's us three together.
I'm alone with Saul and Eleanor.
Adam and I start talking. And
who's in a better position? Come on over.
And all of a sudden, at one point, Richie, for whatever reason, gets on the phone with you and me, I believe.
No, he comes home. He's home.
He's home, but he's on the phone with us. I'm
at the house looking at
him. Right, but he's on the phone with me.
Maybe he's on the phone with
us. And he says,
listen to this.
There was some little window that opened up.
We got the... You don't know.
Right.
You
got to tell what started the communication.
The window was. How did we break take this? It out.
I'm sorry. Go no.
I don't know what the window was. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, you don't.
I don't know.
We get word from camp.
Oh, the Balkan fuck
that
fired.
They fired Balkan.
All right.
Wait. I think we got word from these two.
Can I just go back? Wasn't there a fist fight between Balkan and Roger Lippman at some point?
No. Roger Lippman had a fist fight in an under 16.
That's exaggerated.
At intercamp games, they canceled the game.
There was a lot of jawboning the night before, but there was no violence.
Okay. All right.
But I think what happened was Sheldon, in order to make peace with all the other seniors that were there and the girls' camp and everybody else to stay, he fired Balkan. I think Howie, you and Duke reported that back to us that Balkan got fired. Once we found out Balkan was fired, which was a big issue of the whole revolt,
it was an admission.
Richie, in a selfish way, I'm sure he didn't want Adam home. he wanted to have his fire on. He sees his opportunity.
There are certain times for
certain
children.
Certain times for children.
And the summer is not one of them.
For Richie. I'm going to call Sheldon and try to get you guys back in the camp. So all of a sudden, laying on the couch, like, oh my God, I can't believe this is done. To the slightest shot that I could go back, it was like, 360, 180, whatever you want to call it.
So Richie gets on the phone. On the phone with Sheldon, and Alan and Howie are home, and Lenny's home,
they're all at Ten Briar in Roslyn.
I'm at home alone, and I'm watching my father because he's home. And I'm watching him talk, and they're going, and they're talking, and they're talking, and they're talking.
Are they talking?
They were talking. But I'm serious because they just kept going around in circles. Like Richie was like, you admit that there was a problem, this group leader, they
really
didn't do anything.
And I would call you on the other line. I'd call you on the other line.
And visiting day. And John is still in camp. So Richie's coming up for visiting day.
Yeah, but
there's still this feeling that a bunch of people are going to leave on visiting day. Visiting day is going to be a time to go home.
Because his parents were agents, they had a work line at home and a regular line. So I was calling Adam on the other line from home with you two standing next to me, be like, what's going on? He's like, he's talking. And we're like, any bit of conversation in our minds is like, we got a shot. And whatever transpires, next thing I know, I think Richie called. I don't think he gave you the credit of calling. He called my house to be like,
you're going back to camp. I was like, no, I could not. I mean, I don't have to tell you about your head brushing. I'm jumping up and down.
I remember you being so happy.
All of a sudden,
wait, this
you two.
What about us?
You two look at me. What about us? So I said, yeah, Richie, what about Alan and Howie? He goes, I'll call you right back. So the next thing I know, I hang up the phone. We're all sitting there. And I remember this as good as my child being born. Richie calls me back. I answer the phone in my kitchen. And he says, you're all going back. Tell Howie, brother, back. Me, Howie, and Paul dancing in the den on the orange carpet, holding hands and like doing around rolls.
We're going back to camp.
We're going back to camp. I mean, it was, you know, which really shows you guys never got thrown out. You resigned, quit in honor of us and the whole Swig Rebellion, and then we're so as excited as we were to go back. So anyway, we're all going back.
Now, clearly, and I want to say, because I'm going to give Mons credit, but in that day that we were gone, there was a lot of interplay in the senior group, and I'd like to hear Mons, because he's the only one at camp.
Right, you know what, though? Let's take a break.
We're
going to
pick it up right there in just a moment.
Mark's got to leave.
Now we are
back, and we're telling the story.
We're all excited. We're going home. We call Adam. We're all going home.
Richie, just home.
It's funny. I said we're going home.
I did the same thing.
It was home, boss.
You have to wonder what the chances. You know, Richie is a leading agent. This man's a negotiator.
And
if
you don't want
a different
home.
Person. Like, let's say he wasn't in the picture.
We don't
he
get
have been
back. Definitely
I
not.
Think
I think definitely not.
I don't think
that's fairly important.
I think definitely not.
Yeah.
What and he still a, says what if he still says agent? It's like one of his top five negotiations in his life.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Said it was pretty intense, and it was a hammer, and he did it. I don't think there's any way we went back without my father.
No. No, he was the linchpin. And he literally took us back. And he literally took us back up.
So
we're back.
We're all going back. Do you guys drive
Alan's Porsche.
Motor vehicle. His Porsche.
The German automobile.
We're all driving up down with Adam and his dad. And
my father borrows my uncle's station wagon.
Where we're stopping off at the steak place, right?
Yeah, we're driving back up. We're caravanning back up to camp. The old homestead.
We went for steak. You guys get beers.
He got us all beers.
There's always a time for beer.
And he said the one thing that Sheldon said is
always a
when we come back. He said, Sheldon, the one thing when the boys come back to camp, he called us the boys. Yeah, I guess we
who called you the boys?
Sheldon. He said, when the boys come back
to
camp.
Because we called from the homestead.
We did not. There is no winning. I don't want to hear that they won. They did not win.
Right.
We're letting them back, but they did not win. We won. And Richie's like, and he goes, and I want no mention of Balkan being fired. And I think Richie at that point said, hey.
He's not there.
Enough is enough. They're going to do their thing and blah, blah, blah.
Balkan's not done.
So we leave.
Where is he?
We leave the old homestead and we're coming down. And of course, everybody would imagine how
I think
feel.
It's just the homestead. The old homestead, I believe, is on 14th and 9th.
And it burned down.
It's on the block. No, it's still here.
Whatever it is. So we're coming up Swig Road and all of a sudden the seniors are running out as a boat.
It was.
And Mike Mitchell.
It was very like South America.
Mike Fisher was a Philly. He just looks at his punch cards out of his mouth, like, We won! I mean, we were back.
And the first thing that happens is we drive right up to Sheldon's house, and on that same porch, we had the earlier conversation. Me, Lenny, my father, Sheldon, and Stan start having really, literally, the conditions of our reentry.
All right, before we let
you
in.
We're sitting there. And
let's get something straight.
And the first thing he says is, if anything goes wrong in the senior group, they will be held
and
responsible.
And Richie just lifts his finger and goes, absolutely not. You can't blame them. You know, Richie and Sheldon could talk the same language.
Right.
You know what I'm
saying? Sheldon was an agent also. He's agent.
And Sheldon starts to back off. And at that point, we leave. Everything's good. You guys drove up with us. All the little kids are thrilled. Everybody's thrilled. We're back at Swega. Balkan's gone. We're back. Everything is great.
I feel like we melted right back in. Like, after that.
You know what, Alan?
It was like it took a day off. It was very short.
24 hours. When you think about it,
Everything was really...
You slept on two nights, I slept on one.
Once Howie and I get back, we were back at the Eagle Bar.
Same, nothing right. changed.
Yeah, they had to replace us.
What's his name was your... Elliot was your leader.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, replaced in 18 hours. Yeah.
It's two British guys from London.
It's funny, so the next day we're back...
Sorry, boys, you're bad to take it.
I need some guys with 3 years experience. They must be right in.
And that's why, like, we were both Eagle counselors. They were really short-handed.
The only condition
was on Monster.com.
The only condition that Sheldon had made was that the next day Adam and I were on the lake again. We were on a rowboat, just Adam and I.
Now again, my father has gone back. Things are getting back to normal.
His father's on couch.
And in the one day that we weren't there, we win the under 16 hockey.
He's totally wrong. I played in both games, the under 16 hockey, and that. But anyway. So Adam and I go on the lake and the robot.
That was a great thing that Sheldon got
going. We used to love to go out in the robot.
And we're having a little 60s
party. Gigantor.
He would walk and left, swim
right. Yeah, that's 60s
party. He could fly. We partied a little bit on the robot.
Okay.
We come in and hear Sheldon walking to us as the robot comes in. He's like, oh my God, this is terrible. Now we're going to get thrown out for this. He's like, I want you guys to make a speech in front of the campus at dinner,
yeah,
right, at the flag pole, at the lineup. Right. So he said, all right. So we go to make a speech.
What is it about?
We're both feeling a little loopy because
we're
tired.
We were feeling good.
Can you tell you what you're going to speak about?
He said what he wanted us to say. So Adam gets up there and starts to speak, and I just start to giggle.
And this is like, it. This is it.
And Adam does this whole like, I just want to apologize. You know, it's all like sarcastic. Wow.
Tears are coming,
and that was it. And all of a sudden, it was over. We were back, and we were heroes to the ladies. All of a sudden, like, oh my God!
I mean, we went from 6.5 years of nothing to a barrage of something.
A semi-barrage.
It was a barrage compared to what was happening in camp before that. I mean, let's just say we did better than Ed Burke.
It's good to be an insurrectionist.
So from there forward, kind of
they don't call Levy Brad Pitt for nothing.
And that's it. It's back to normal.
It's not back to normal. It's better than normal.
It's
back. Normal was terrible. It was back to all of a sudden we can hang out.
That's what I mean. Back to normal.
We never experienced it though. That was the
back
problem.
To normal. Never had it.
Back to normal. So wait, say who was the head counselor now for this?
Who's the group leader?
Dave Cather.
Dave Cather, who?
I don't remember who that is.
He didn't like us either. But here's the reason not to like us. I don't want to go into it. But at the end of the day, he was all right. He let us hang. He let us do our thing.
There was respect.
We were good. There was respect. Yeah, we had 9 people in L.A.
Was he a British guy?
No, he was like long-haired, hippie Allman Brothers type of dude.
Right.
Andrew Barry was our counselor. He was an English dude.
Andrew Barry.
Michael Dowry, you're thinking of.
That's why
I know. Andrew Barry.
Andrew Barry.
That's his name. That's what they call him.
Him and Adam were face-to-face one night in the park.
Andrew Barry and Adam.
Really?
That was after that, I think. I don't know.
That guy didn't like us.
Adam didn't like us. He was face-to-face with you.
I know.
About what?
You?
Over?
You were going to fight a counselor?
Me was us.
Wait, we left an important part of the rep. Yeah, we came back. We were there. Now, Holtzman.
Oh, this
we should
is
call
terrible.
Him the Holtzman at this point. He should tell the story. We return. Holtzman has a week where he's just the Phantom. Let me just finish. He ends up going home.
He takes on the name the Phantom.
Holtzy again. I can't say enough. I tip my hat.
I can't say enough either.
Let's go to Holtzy.
Let's reach out.
We're going
to
reach out
to Mark
Holtzman.
Right, we'll be right back.
We'll be right
and that's it. All right, we're back. And we have a special guest who's phoned in. Mark.
All right, so you want to know about this, the Phantom.
I know.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, Lenny and Adam were just talking about when they came back to camp, and so they didn't have a good handle on what was going on maybe the night of.
They didn't have a handle on what was going on the night of,
like when they left and the next day. Like, and whatever you want to talk about, like just fill us in on like your experience.
Well,
All right. Mark.
What's up, Holtz? We're back and we're live, and we want to hear your perspective on what's going on.
I think we lost him. Holtz.
Hello?
All right, let's stay alive, guys. We're still alive.
All right, we're still alive.
Just to give a little perspective, Mark Holtzman, the protagonist in this story, yet the strong, the silent bear. Ultimately in the story.
And in the end,
from the beginning, silent, he's the only one who stood strong along the way. And we're reconnecting right now.
Sheldon, shut the phones off again.
Are you there?
Oh, dialing out. He's not there yet.
Hello?
Mark.
Silence.
All right, we're back with you, man. We're live. Well, not live, but recording. So,
we're live to tape.
So give it, you know, let us know your take.
So, when do you want me to start from? Or from the...
You know, we stopped.
We just all got thrown out.
Yeah, Lenny and Adam were out of camp, so maybe the day, like right after they got thrown out, like what happened that night, what the next day was like, and
from there.
What are your thoughts
about being thrown out, really?
So what they did to me is I was in LA and they told me I had to leave and go into the infirmary. I had to go live in the infirmary.
And you weren't sick, right?
Yeah, and that guy, Dr. Jim, was there. You know, he used to tell stories to Dave Feldman and I about him, that he was the...
I heard him, too.
Messiah. He was the Messiah.
This was our doctor. He thought he was the, second coming of Christ.
Yeah, he said he was the Messiah, that he was writing a book, and that he was going to go to all the rabbis and the Hasidic rabbis...
Right, to prove it.
...proclaim himself as the Messiah, so they had me... They set me up there with him, you know.
To become his disciple.
So, I was in the infirmary over there, so I'm staying there, and so I go in the refrigerator. He had a box of fry hoppers, so I started eating from them, and then he came back. I just remember him coming back Jesus that night, and then he was flipping out because I ate his fry hoppers, you know.
He didn't take well to that, despite being Christ reincarnated.
He was the Messiah, but he was Messiah,
but don't take his fry hoppers, man. Because listen, I can preach the gospel, but don't touch my fucking fry hoppers.
Don't touch my fry hoppers. He was kind of a quack.
He was. He told the stories too. He had that whole rock and roll synchronicity theory that like Mark Bolan was
the
devil.
Remember the whole
unicorn thing? That's a whole episode. We should get him on. See how that's going.
So when we confronted him at his house, remember when the rebellion was going down? I got up and I said, "You have to give me my radio back because they had confiscated my box radio. I had my box radio, so I said, you need to give that back." And then
who are you asking that to?
Sheldon.
Oh, perfect.
I got up, you know, we got him in his face. Well, if you're kicking me out, you need to give me my stuff back, you know. So I remember I got the radio back, but like I think you, as it was said in the transcripts, they didn't give me those nunchucks back.
No, I wouldn't have either. I gotta be honest.
I think they had other plans for those, but
yeah.
I wasn't looking at it that way, but that's good.
I did get the box radio back, so. So what I basically did those days is, to just take the radio, go down to the basketball court, and be shooting around. And I remember the second game, I think, of the tournament. I went in there, and I was basically jumping up and hanging on the rim and shooting shots from the corner as the game was
That's
going
what
on.
It was, yeah. Right. Yeah, because we were saying, we were talking about rooting against the team, and then somehow it took another level, and I guess that was it. Like, I remember you now shooting shots from the corner while the game was on.
You think Hulk's getting on the court in the middle of the game?
And shooting shots, that was it.
Shooting?
That was it.
It's disruptive.
That is a little disruptive.
We have six guys on the court and another ball.
But a political statement.
There's two balls on the court.
All right.
Yeah, I think I remember, I don't know who was there, but I went over to Jimmy Brody's place. I walked over there.
Yeah, well, Alan and I had quit
that
day
because
Lenny had gotten thrown out. So we, fortunately, Timmy was around, so we stayed at Timmy's house, and I'm sure he joined us.
I don't know who was there. I forget who was there, but I did walk over there.
She said, "Kim, say goodbye to me." What's that, Holtz?
That was on field four, right? In the goalpost?
Yeah. See how we tie it all together.
Wait, Holtz, I missed that. What's that?
I I walked over to Jimmy Brody's house, I think one of those days. I was just hanging out there, I think, with Timmy and a few other folks.
So they weren't even paying attention to you? They're like, just do whatever you want?
Yeah, they didn't have, nobody was, you know, they didn't, you know, they, I was basically doing anything I wanted, you know.
Wow.
Well, we were saying, right? Like, your parents weren't home, and your grandparents were busy as well, so you know.
They accept him.
Well, what would you do for food?
Well, my folks are on a business trip, and my grandmother refused to have me, sent back.
Right. Makes sense.
They were giving you three squares, right?
Did they feed you? They must have fed you, right?
What was this?
Did you eat? Did they give you food?
Yeah, I was eating. Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I had to eat in the infirmary. I did have my own table. I forget how it worked. I definitely was eating.
I
went over there.
So you were nourished. Okay.
I went over there to the Jimmy's house. I don't know how long I stayed there, but weird. And then one night I walked over to, I said, well, you know, I might as well walk over to Swatona, you know.
Yep.
I walked over there, and I walked right into their mess hall as they were eating.
I don't know about that move, but all right.
Yeah. So I walked in.
Do you guys know Hambone?
I was scared to death.
Audrey invited me to sit down with them, so I sat down. I was telling her the whole story about what happened, and she was kind of sympathetic to the whole thing, you know.
Wow.
They probably didn't know what was going on at all over it.
But how cool is Audrey? So Holtz just walks into their cafeteria amazing. And she says, come sit down at my table?
Are we back yet or no?
Holtz, what did you have for dinner that night?
So, Adam and Lenny's with Sean.
I can't remember. I don't remember.
All right, so let's pick it up from where we left off chronologically.
Do you have any regrets about the reunion? Or not? The rebellion?
Regrets
about the rebellion those first few days that we should have done something differently?
Lenny and Adam. Lenny was expressing some remorse that maybe he and Adam should have like followed your lead a little bit more as far as, you know.
Or does Holtz think he could have done something differently to kind of...
All right, maybe, all right, mistook that.
Second question. He's still doing those towers.
All right, well...
Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I'm listening, but when people talk,
They just wanted to know if you had any regrets about, like how it all went down, that maybe Lenny and Adam didn't stand up to the level that you did, or maybe you didn't handle yourself the way you wanted. Like, are you cool with how everything went down from your perspective?
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, it had to happen. You know, Jeff Balkin, that guy was the definite instigator. You know, he
put. Holtz, how much do we hate him?
So he had to be confronted. You know.
Yep.
It almost got physical too, and he was really nasty about stuff too. But then he got kicked out the next day. That's
a compliment. When did that happen? Because I don't remember him like getting fired, and I don't remember how that was handled.
You were home.
Oh, that happened.
No, because we had reported that back to you.
After everyone got kicked out and left, or you guys left, or whatever, then they fired him. And I remember him. He got really heated with somebody. I forget.
I thought it was Roger Littman. I kind of remember them having some sort of altercation, but they said no. But
no, we don't know.
They fired him, and he got kicked out. And then so that was our whole argument. Well, if you acknowledge that he was the problem and you fired him, then you should just let everybody back.
Right.
They realized, you know, I think it was also said in the transcript that some people were threatening to leave, so...
A lot of people.
We were.
And we're saying it was 4 or 5 days before visiting.
If they didn't get rid of him, you know, then they would have had a bigger problem. You know?
Hey, Holtz, it's Lenny. The one thing with Holtzman that was different than the rest of us, they were afraid of him physically.
Yeah.
Right? They felt endangered by Holtz. They felt he was going to hurt him.
And I think even the fact that he couldn't go home... And that he was there sort of as the Phantom hurt his chances of staying. Maybe had he gone home with everybody when we went home,
could
maybe
have been part
we
of
all
a bigger return.
Back.
It's his grandparents' fault.
So, it's your grandma's fault.
It's your grandma's
fault being Europe.
All right. Cool. Holtz.
I think I read it. I sent you that message about, I remembered So after he, I was on the ski slope and I wanted to get off, he docked me from canteen that night, Balkan. But I went there anyway, and, you know, I was ready to, you know, if he was going to try and stop me, it was going to get physical at that point.
Right, right.
So I remember, I don't know what happened there. I think the people got between us or something, and then that night, so when he docked me from the playing in the basketball tournament.
The
story's right
on
the
right. Yeah, so
far.
So
you listen, the story doesn't.
And then we came back, and then we came back, and that's when we formed the plan about the boycott.
He's got some details.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but then they. But then they folded on the boycott. That was it.
Well, yeah. Adam was saying like they had made a thing where like if they felt they could definitely win the game, they would play.
They folded the next minute. Oh fuck!
That. That's where it went haywire because if they would have held strong and
right
held to the boycott, you know, then we would have some leverage because remember Swago is the host of the tournament.
No,
just that one game, I think. I think somehow or another the tournament got passed around to all the camps because nobody was hosting it.
It was dispersed.
Right, yeah. Right.
No, Swago was the host that year because all the... We were like the
first game.
You're incorrect.
Just the host of the first
You're incorrect.
I think so. Anyway, Holtz, I'm going to take a pause for a second, man, because...
Hold on, we'll be right back.
Yeah, I'll give you a call in 2 seconds, all right?
All right.
We're back.
We are back. This has been a killer episode. The episode of episodes.
Thank you for the pizza, Alan.
My pleasure.
And thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure.
So wait, let's just finish. What you were going to say?
Tie it up first, boys.
Go.
What?
Did you enjoy the rest of your summer?
The rest of summer is fantastic. It's better than normal.
We had a great time at Swago.
It's better than normal.
Is that what this is about? Swago?
Do you remember that place?
What is that?
Anyway. We had a couple of parties after camp.
So we had a great time at Swago, great time at Sotona. We didn't end up being leaders, but we had a great time. I do want to say this.
And we played hard in Color War. Yes. We didn't boycott. We were good campers.
I remember the year just playing itself out like a normal year.
Well, yeah.
And it was better.
Well, better than what it was before.
I do want to give a shout out. In 83 when we were leaving, yeah. You know, it was just everybody's crying, we're leaving. We knew it was the end for us. And I remember Leo Rosenkart,
right.
Who was a great camper, he was an intern 2 years younger than us.
Yeah.
He was crying hysterically, but Leo passed away
yeah.
A few years after, so it was just a quick shout out to Leo Rosenkart.
Alright,
he did the foul shots on the Apache.
We like to dedicate this.
I remember Leo.
He did the foul shots.
He was a good basketball shooter. Yeah. Yes. He was like a tough little guy. He was
small,
almost like a
small player bench in Denver.
But with that said, I remember giving him my last card, crying, and we went on the buses.
He was a point guard.
We went home, and Swago was done.
The rest of the summer was great. There was one more summer after, and then both camps closed.
Yeah,
that was it. Mark was there the last year. What was it, 80 kids on the boys' side? The girls' side still thriving, though.
Girls' side was okay. The boys' side was 60.
If you were a girl, you had to be pissed. Or a parent of the girls. And all these different tones, they just brought you down.
They're like a weight around our necks, those boy camp people.
We were done, which I got to tell you, all of a sudden, Swago's done. You don't know, being a waiter. All the things you dreamed about being. Yeah, they were so glorious, but they were.
Didn't have you back as waiters?
Guys, no, there was
no. I remember
to ask, did you even ask?
I remember seeing each other one moment, you know, I hope we worked everything out, like some sort of brown nose thing, just to like maybe.
Oh, that's nice.
Hope, you know,
who said that?
It didn't quite work.
Who said that?
I believe I said.
Did you ever inquire to like be waiters there, or was
no? We had big parties.
Harry, we were not going back in '84.
We're shafted. We're shafted at the
8 year. Adam, Lenny, here's your $75 for the week. Good job.
Adam, your head waiter.
If the going shelter to home, we'll get your hands off. Maybe took his call.
Yeah,
you
know, it's over.
You didn't pass the interview.
Man, great episode, Mwah.
Excellent.
Let's call it a night, man.
All right.
Good shit.
All right.
Thanks for having us. We hope
thanks
we're
for
back.
Having
we
us.
Got more stories.
We'll be back. We'll be back. We have a lot more to talk about.
We'll be on location every year, at least once a year.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night. All right, Holtz, we're up. So,
okay.
feel free to do your thing.
Yeah, the Phantom speaks. Sometimes from the ashes of a dead dream, bird flies. As the phoenix rises from the ashes, the Phantom too rises and hovers over the battlefield. Below him, he sees the bloody carcasses of his past slain across the vast wasteland. Gray ghosts banter and quiver in a laughing scream. Broken down bunkhouses and boarded up buildings erode empty and alone. He saunters through the dark night down the long dark road of his anonymity. The mother of all thoughts creates him through a veil of mystery. He's there, but he's not there. He's been outcasted, ostracized. Like a poet once said, the outcast is transitional. He could shine like a diamond or shatter like a demon. Like any great heroic tale, this one, too, had its martyr. It's 1983, and the young rebel roams down Canteen Road. As usual, the path is vastly dark. The steps are more fathom than walked, as the young man muses. He feels a great anger, as if something treasured and vital has been taken from him. He feels an overwhelming sense of sadness and loss, but also a great sense of freedom and wonderment. There's somewhat of a transcendent glow in his eyes. For the first time in his life, he's unattended, unaccounted for, anonymous. He takes a gulp of sweet water from the artesian well and continues his roam through the dark night. What's it like to live with no rules, he asks himself, with no curfew, no ODs, no head counselors, no Peter Geller. He's just there, alone and independent, defiant. In the naivety of an angry young soul, he took a firm, direct step, and now he stands above them all, like his hero, the greatest, Muhammad Ali. He took a stand against what oppressed him. He read in Ali's book how the greatest stood up to the U.S. government and said, "No, I won't fight the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong never enslaved me or called me nigger." He gave up what was most precious to him, to stand up for what he believed in. What's it like to defend something you love? It's like a mother bear protecting her young cub. Cross her path like Jeff Balkin and your one sorry-ass motherfucker. I love Tansuelo. I love the solace and space it provided. For 10 months, you put up with the carnival act of institutionalized contamination for the privilege of 2 months of real learning, or better yet, for the space and the opportunity to discover oneself, to meet elders and mentors and discover what it is about life that is essential and truly meaningful. As you've read in the previous story, this ideal was threatened. The serpent entered the garden. In that moment, my spirit was tested and I stood like a man amongst boys. In this instant, I learned a great lesson. Just because someone older and in authority to you says something is true doesn't necessarily mean that it is. In other words, sometimes it's necessary to question, stand up against what you've been conditioned to believe. Later on in my study of transcendental philosophy, I would see it defined by Henry David Thoreau as civil disobedience. To quote him, "The only obligation which I have a right to assume is to do at any time what I think right." It is truly enough said that a corporation has no conscience. But a corporation of conscientious men is a corporation with a conscience. What happened that summer at Camp Swiggle was a microcosmic diorama of our great country at large. Chief Sagamore rises in his grave. The white man swindled him. He brought him false gifts and poisoned the rivers, polluted his land. Instead of coexisting and respecting all his relations, he, in the words of Joni Mitchell, paved paradise and put up a parking lot. But as the ghost dancers prophesied, Sheldon and his evil empire will sink into the dirt, and the buffalo will again arise. Uncle Dave, Aunt Rita, and the old waves will return, and then and only then will the great green and white water bird spread her wings over the heart-shaped lake. So the Phantom endures. He lives on the fringe of the great mystery that he calls life. He has no regrets. He carries a pain, but has come to realize that he is one of our greatest teachers. He learned that to suffer in the name of what one believes and loves is sometimes necessary. To quote the Bhagavad Gita, "Good men eating the remnants of sacrifice are free of any guilt. but evil men who cook for themselves the food of sin. May your sons for be loyal wheresoever they roam.
Amen.
Amen.
All right.
Amen.
Woo. All right.
Beautiful. Yeah. Know the way.
My
friends.
Good night.